This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Brian Fernandez and Tan Chung Han. The morning run continues. It's just 38 minutes past 7 on the 2nd of August. Now, we start with Apple. Apple has reported stronger than expected results for the past quarter with higher revenues and profits, and the markets have rewarded it with a more than 6% rise in extended trading, closing at 150.05 US dollars.
Well, Sharad, basically the shares have climbed about 30% this year, and earnings have essentially topped all of analysts' estimations. Profits were up 12% to about 8.7 billion. Revenues rose 7.2% to about 45 billion compared to the average projection that was below was around 44 million. So 61% of the revenue, interestingly enough, comes out of the U.S.
Yeah, from, you mean from outside,
outside the U.S. U.S.? That's right.
Yeah, and also about two-thirds, about 60-ish percent of total revenue for Apple actually comes from the iPhones as well. So can you imagine 41 million iPhones sold in that quarter alone, right? This despite analysts saying that, oh, this was going to be a lame duck earnings season, earnings results, because everyone's looking forward to that highly anticipated iPhone 8, which could even come out as early as next month. So everyone was looking forward to that. But yet you have these numbers here. Not so much for having that lull before the iPhone 8. 41 million iPhones sold.
The head-spinning number for me was really the fact that the Apple services business over the last 12 months has become the size of a Fortune 100 company. So to give you an idea of how large that is, Petronas is ranked 184 in the Fortune 500 list. So it's just mind-boggling how fast the growth and how big this business has become. And that includes, of course, the App Store business and their B2B services business.
Right. You know, Apple certainly gives you a lot to talk about, right? You know, be it their share price rally or, you know, every quarter we talk about their earnings. But it's always so exciting, though, because, again, just the sheer mammoth numbers that are coming out of the company is just, again, so, you know, near impossible to grasp, really.
So what do they have to do next? I mean, isn't the problem for a company like this is that when you have such stellar performances, you have to keep it up. Otherwise, people get disappointed. And, you know, is it a new product? Is it a new service? What is it that they're going to go into?
And you've got a very good point that for them, it's always about how do we move on to the next new thing. And for them, the next new thing is really on working on things like autonomous driving systems. So they were thinking of building their own car, but I think it's moved towards then the software and the intelligence that drives the car. They're working on smart glasses, health and fitness offerings, even some of their own semiconductor technology. So in addition to that, what Tim Cook said he's really excited about is really about the augmented reality technology that they're working on. So there's quite a few areas. They've made a few bets in different areas. Let's see how it all pans out and which areas really gives them that big kick.
But aren't all the big boys in the same playing field, at least when it comes to autonomous cars, augmented reality, I mean, you know, smart spectacles, whatever it is?
Yeah, you've got Facebook, you know, who's obviously, you know, toying around with the augmented reality space. But that doesn't mean that they are traditional, and I'm using air quotes here, the traditional drivers of growth for Apple, you know, those still have plenty of juice in them, though. Like, just as part of their earnings announcement earlier this morning, Malaysian time, they announced that Walmart is set to roll out 19,000 iPads as part of their training program. So if you've got that kind of growth, again, the iPhone 8, though, you've got so many iPhone 6 users, and I think there are a couple here in the office as well, and perhaps some of you listening right now. Our producer just raised his hand. He's got an iPhone 6. Well, guess what, buddy? I'm talking to you, Mr. Producer. You are due for an upgrade soon, right? There we go. He's nodding his head. So there are plenty of iPhone 6 users who still have to upgrade, possibly by next month, if not over the holiday period. So, you know, even with these forays into autonomous systems and augmented reality, don't discount the iPad. Don't discount certainly the iPhone, right? Still tremendous growth right there. Now, there obviously are challenges to the Apple story, okay? So they are having to contend with, say, the newly rolled out GST. in India, right? They've got that production facility out there. So apparently there's this...
And that's going to dampen demand? Is that what the issue is?
Well, no, because they have had this long-standing demand to the tax officers over there saying that, hey, you know, you should give us some slack.
Slack,
you know, when it comes to the tax. But India is saying, nope, you know, GST, you know, you got to toe the line, okay? So there's that debate going on. Also, you recall the Irish government, they are set to claim, I'm going to get the number here, they are set to claim about... I lost the number here.
I love the sound effects.
Yeah, I know.
But what is the point about the Irish government?
So the Irish government is set to take over 10 billion US, I think about 15 billion US dollars in back taxes from Apple. Now, granted, their cash pile is like what, 260
plus billion US dollars. Yeah. But that's also
more than the reserves of many countries. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. But that's an EU mandated tax collection rather than the Irish government itself that wants to collect it.
15.2 billion US dollars back taxes to be claimed by the Irish government.
Okay, so your chit-chatting actually did pay off.
Yeah.
Okay.
It bought me a few precious seconds.
It did. I don't know what it's done for our listeners, but anyway. Uber Technologies and Didi Chuxing are once again going head-to-head, this time in Estonia. The Chinese giant with a multi-billion dollar war chest is backing Estonia's Taxify with the financial investment and support on technology developments.
Well, this is really part of Didi's encirclement strategy. If you look at it, they've not been in Europe. This is their first major move into Europe. And what they're basically looking at is to grow in cities from Prague to London. And Taxify's strategy is also to move into Africa. So that's...
Into the entire continent or just specific parts of the African continent?
Well, they've not specified exactly. Well, according to the CEO of Taxify, they're looking to be number one in Europe and Africa. So big ambitions, obviously, with Didi's money backing them. You wouldn't discount Didi being successful in Europe as well.
I think there's a common theme here between Uber and also Apple that we just spoke about, right? Is that the fight in China is tremendously competitive. You got Uber, who last year actually sold off their 20% stake in its operations to Didi.
Yes, so, that's right. They merged together, so they emerged with a 20% stake.
They had to get out, you know, because look, the market was just too tough for them. You've also got Apple, who cited those challenges as well, and because I think Apple, when it comes to their China sales, though, it actually fell 10% on year in their latest quarter. The quarter before that fell 14% on year. You know, just goes to show the kind of resilience, you know, of the cannibals that are there in China, the Chinese cannibals. Like, they'll eat up the competition, right, and then take the fight abroad. Uber and Didi's case is what, Estonia?
That's right. Yeah. And that's really the starting point. If you look at how the encirclement strategy has happened, remember that just a couple of days ago, Didi invested together with SoftBank an additional round of funding of $2 billion US dollars in Grab in order for Grab to solidify its market position in the 7 countries in Southeast Asia that it operates. So really, total encirclement strategy.
Now, back to one of the stories that keeps giving is, Han, you're like...
That's my line. OneMDB.
So you have to have a new line. Absolutely. So we talked about it on Monday because there was a payment due in a settlement with the Abu Dhabi group IPIC. Now, IPIC, that didn't come through. What's the state of play now?
Well, basically, according to 1MDB, which has responded to IPIC, they say that all payments due from 1MDB will be made from the proceeds of 1MDB's rationalization plan, but the receipt of those funds has been delayed to August 2017 due for the need for additional regulatory approvals.
All right. So here's the context here, okay? You've got an entity that is wholly owned by the Ministry of Finance here in Malaysia, who has missed this payment that was due on July 31st. Now, this wasn't something like, hey, surprise, you got this payment. Nah, this has been a well-telegraphed move. They knew about this payment that was due way back in April when they reached that arbitration settlement between the IPIC, and which subsequently became unconditional in May. Okay, so they knew well in advance. Yet the fact of the matter is they have missed this deadline. So now, I recall covering this story, you know, at my previous gig, you know, for a few years now. And back in April 2016, okay, 1MDB was really trumpeting the fact that, hey, we've got 2.3 billion ringgit in cash surplus now. You know, they have paid off their bank debts, their short-term loans, you know. So they were showing the kind of improvements that they had in their rationalization plan. Obviously, since April 2016 till now, there was the Bank Negara fine. They have been accused of being in default by IPIC, which has led us to this. And here we are. They have missed another payment. So serious questions have been posed about whether or not government entities directly owned, directly linked to the Malaysian government, can they fulfill their obligations?
So this is, for me, rather perplexing, because we've been sharing great data regarding Malaysia, whether it was export data, it was growth data. The overall macro picture for Malaysia is very, very good. And the noise coming out of 1MDB with the investment community has simmered to almost no noise.
Yeah, well, Macquarie Bank describes it as insignificant levels, yeah. Right?
Now it's back up. All they had to do is make the payment on time, and this problem would have gone away.
I want to ask you a question, though, about the reason given, because it seemed to me rather perplexing. From an IPIC standard point of view, does it really matter where 1MDB gets its money from to pay them back? Isn't it the IPIC position would be, you pay me the money that you say you'll pay
exactly.
me.
Exactly.
Whether it comes from this tranche of money that you have or this account doesn't really matter, or does it?
No, so IPIC has also just very quickly, subsequently after 1MDB's statement, they then issued a response, submitted it to the London Stock Exchange, and here's what they said. 1MDB has got a five business day cure period. Cure period. I just find that fascinating. It's like hashtag sorry no cure. You know, you got a five business day cure period for you to remedy. That's the word they use. Remedy this non payment, and after that, you know, 1MDB will be subject again. I mean, keeping in mind though, the original claims though was $6.5 billion. That's how much IPIC was claiming from 1MDB and the Ministry of Finance as well. So then they settle. You know, there apparently are still some goodwill discussions going on, and it came down to a $600+ million payment that was due on July 31st. 1MDB missed it.
That's the first tranche, the second at the end of the year.
Correct,
right?
At the end of the year.
I want to ask, I mean, some people on the road were saying, well, if this is an entity wholly owned by the Ministry of Finance, of course, is the Malaysian government, is it, you know, would they be saying, well, doesn't the Malaysian government have the money to pay
exactly,
you know, this money off? I mean, it's $2.8 billion ringgit. Is that
translation? 2.3, something like that. But okay, I mean, to be fair here, and I guess that's my role here, like, to be fair, perhaps, what 1MDB said was this, that they have the funds coming, they have these proceeds from the rationalization plan. Now, I messaged 1MDB asking, you know, which part of the rationalization specifically? Is it the Bandar Malaysia thing? Is it a TRX? You know, was it, or perhaps payments still owed to them from the Edra Energy sale? You know, no response, so fine. But, you know, they say that they will have the money by this month, by August 2015. IPIC says they've got five business days. 1MDB says that they can pay it by August. So hopefully, I hope they can certainly pay it. I mean, if for nothing else, is to shore up the confidence that essentially, okay, that the Malaysian government or any of its own wholly owned entities can meet its obligations, all right? Because if they mess up on this, you've already got market commentary saying that this could crystallize contingent liabilities on the government's balance sheet. So it doesn't look good, lah. Okay, it doesn't look good. You know that the government and a wholly owned entity by the Ministry of Finance cannot meet its payment obligations, one that they knew well in advance, months in advance.
Okay, also in the news, of course, is Iris Corp, its external auditor, expressed a qualified opinion on the group's financial statements for the financial year ending the 31st of March.
Well, so basically, Iris Corp is an organization that has had a few challenges. It's basically a global solutions provider that does e-government solutions. And Baker Tilly Montero Heng, which is their auditor, qualified their report. Its audited report basically on concerns of impairment, loss of property and plant equipment. They were unable to properly account for goodwill, receivables, carrying value of Iris inventory, all of which really cast doubt on the overall health of the company. The company reported a net loss of $318 million for the financial year 2017, from a profit previously of $6 million in 2016. So it's, you know, it's a big reversal. Most of them were exceptional losses due to impairments.
Yeah. And you've got this qualified opinion coming from the auditors on the back of months of turmoil here at Iris Corp. Back in January, I believe, right, you had a Iris Corp official who was arrested by the MACC due to an alleged corruption involving a project that they did in Africa. I think it's the
Republic of Guinea.
There we go. So, you know, you've got that going on. And now also you've got a new chairman. I think it just announced yesterday, right? A new chairman at Iris Corp.
That took Nick Azman Mohamed Zain.
All right, so what is he going to have to do?
Well, he's got to turn around.
Yeah, that is going to be quite the turnaround here. Again, just to reiterate the number that Brian mentioned earlier, the net loss for the financial year 2017, which ended March 31st, came up to 319 million ringgit. Okay, it's just tremendous. You know, when you compare, say, like the financial year before that, net profit 6.3 million. I mean, if you go a couple of years back, yeah, they had net loss back then also. It's only 21 million ringgit versus the 319 million ringgit net loss in financial year 2017.
Interesting factoid, the company was led by its chairman was Tan Sri Razali Ismail, because now he heads SUHACAM, the National Human Rights Commission. We're coming up to the news shortly, and of course, then we'll have the breakfast grill. Our guest, KK Chua, president of the Asia Pacific region for Mary Kay. He's going to be speaking to Han. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.